Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking about something a little out of the ordinary here on the podcast. We're used to diving deep into what it's like growing blogs, tech startups, agencies, consulting businesses, but today, and after many listener requests, we're taking a fascinating journey into what it's like quickly breaking into both the film and commercial industries. Our accomplished guest today is writer and director Toby Waskow, who I originally met and was friends with back in college. Since graduating school just a few short years ago, Toby has been blowing up. He was the writer and director of BMW's Father's Day commercial this year. He directed a commercial for Nike that aired during the NBA All-Star Game in 2018. He directed and produced a documentary on Blake Griffin. He won an award for Best Short Film at the Bahamas International Film Festival. The list seriously goes on and on. Now, Toby's focused on the release of his much-anticipated short film, Sides of a Horn, the first film to tell the story of South Africa's poaching war from both sides of the fence. This project blurs the lines between narrative and documentary in a fascinating way. Oh, and Toby also landed the support of the Virgin Group and founder Sir Richard Branson, who's joined the film as an executive producer. In this episode, Toby and I talk about how he systematically applied creative ingenuity and cold outreach tactics to open up doors for himself and land commercial directing projects with companies like BMW and Nike. We cover the exact strategies that have helped him forge partnerships and collaborations with Sir Richard Branson, Blake Griffin, hip-hop artists, and more. We dive into what it's like producing a short film in a relatively remote location of the world, how he's gone about funding a long-term project like this, his process for pitching spec work with major brands, and more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Toby Waskow. Toby, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ryan.
All right, my man. So the first question I ask all of my guests here on the show is, what book are you reading right now, or what's been a favorite of yours recently?
So there's a book by Brian Grazer, who's a producer in Hollywood. He's partnered with Ron Howard. They started Imagine Entertainment together. That was my last read. And it's all about curiosity and how he's basically forged his career and sustained that career by always being curious. And, you know, as he's a producer and he's written too, but like in the film industry, it's all about finding new ideas and new stories and new characters and new worlds to put on the screen. And so, having a curious mind to go through life looking through for those ideas, even if it's subconsciously, I think is massive and has been something that I've always carried with me and didn't really realize how much it was helping me until I just read this book.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I mean, that's something that's a skill that's worth building and sharpening, I'm sure, too.
Absolutely, yeah, 100%.
All right, Toby. So we originally met each other in college at Chapman University down in Orange County, Southern California, close to Los Angeles, where you now live. But can you rewind the clock for us real quick? Tell us where you're originally from.
Yeah, so I'm from Sheffield, England. It's in the north of England. They say the best thing about Sheffield is the road on the way out. It's not the prettiest place, but, there's some really cool people that come out of there, and, the Arctic Monkeys, one of my favorite bands, came out of Sheffield.
Oh, no way.
The Full Monty, one of my favorite films, came out of Sheffield. And so it's definitely a breeding ground for some cool people, but it's definitely it's a very industrial, gritty, not the prettiest place in England.
Industrial and gritty. You know, which actually brings me to my next question. What did your parents do growing up? Is that something that kind of shaped your trajectory, maybe helped you decide that leaving Sheffield was in the cards one day?
Yeah, so my dad has always been a serial entrepreneur. He's had a lot of success in building businesses and restaurants, retail, and bars. And so I think that watching him and how hard he worked and kind of the tenacity and entrepreneurial spirit put that in me. And so I'm on a very, very different career path to him, but in a creative industry, but I bring a entrepreneurial spirit and approach to everything I do, which I think is a huge attribute to the success that I've been having in this industry.
Yeah, I noticed that's a trend with pretty much everyone I've interviewed here on the show, whether it's a parent or some sort of mentor figure from early formative years. It seems like most people get an entrepreneurial spirit from someone that they get to learn from as they're growing up too.
Absolutely, yeah. And just watching it, I think it inspires you. I didn't necessarily learn very specific traits or ways to do things. It was more just observing and getting inspired by it. And it's carried through life.
Yes. Yeah, clearly. So Toby, as we said earlier, we met at Chapman University, where you actually attended the film school, which from all accounts, from everyone I've met who's been through it, says it's an awesome program. So if you can, remember back, when was the first time that you really started to dabble in filmmaking yourself?
So I decided I was going to do this when I was 15 years old, 14 years old. It was when I was still in England, and I, for a French class, our teacher asked us to tell a story in any format. So people in French, so people wrote short stories and poems and essays, and I asked if I could make a film. And so that was the first film I ever made. And it became this thing that everyone loved, and we would watch it. We watched it like four more times throughout the year. And I've kind of fell in love with the process of filmmaking, how fun it was, and kept making other movies. And I also fell in love with the experience of the audience reaction. So sitting in a classroom with all of my classmates and my teacher and being there as people laughed at the funny moments and got quiet during the tense moments. And I just loved that experience, that shared experience of viewing something with the came out of your head and is your vision and the story that you put so much into with an audience and experiencing that with them.
Yeah, it's kind of this beautiful craft where you get to directly see the impact of your work on people, in real time if you're there with them, right? But that's kind of a common sentiment that we've had too with a lot of writers on the podcast is that they're going through an airport, they see someone reading their book, like, wow, how cool of a feeling is that? So that's very relatable. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely carries through to digital formats too. Like I love when the moment that something goes out, whether it's a commercial or a music video or passion project, and seeing how the world reacts. Because you never know. And that's kind of exciting. They may hate it. Mm-hmm. They may be offended. They may love it. It may inspire people to change or to... So it's definitely a really exciting part of the process.
Now, looking back at it, would you say that film school, going to Chapman's Film School, was a worthwhile investment for you? And maybe, you know, to kind of wrap this in a nice bow, who is a good fit for going to film school? Who's going to benefit from it?
That's a great question. I 100% benefited. But I think that you, more so probably than other experiences in other programs at schools, you really, really get out of it what you put into it, in the sense that what I learned most in film school was not in traditional classrooms or classes or lectures. It was finding the right people in the school who were the most talented and the most collaborative, and developing those relationships, getting on sets and again, being entrepreneurial, like coming up with concepts and putting the right team together. And, you know, from day one of school, I shot my first short film freshman year at Chapman, and it wasn't a class project. It was a passion project that I put together with a bunch of people I was making relationships with there. And, you know, you need so many people to make a film. You need your DP and your production designer and your sound person and you know, everyone through post-production, and it's about finding the right people to collaborate with, because you know, a lot of, as the director, you get all the praise, but it's truly like, I'm only as good as my cinematographer, and I'm only as good as my production designer and my editor. And so for me, the film school process was learning how to make relationships, making those relationships, developing them. Half the people that I work with today are people that I went to Chapman with, and people that I worked on my student films with. And now we're doing, you know, $250,000 commercials together, and we're helping each other, and they're recommending me to people, and I'm recommending them to people. And, we all kind of learned together and developed our careers together. And, so that's the most valuable thing I got out of film school. I don't think, if you're going to just go to film school to, sit in classrooms and listen to lectures, like read articles and there's plenty of stuff on YouTube, where you can get that same information. It's more about the hands-on experience and treating it like your career has already begun. Not like you're preparing for your career. If that makes sense.
I love that. I think that's the perfect advice. Treat it as if your career has already begun. And you know, you mentioned something that kind of naturally led this in the direction that I was hoping this conversation would go. So fast forwarding a little bit, you know, post film school, let's say, in the past couple of years, you've been a part of some incredible projects. You were a writer and director for BMW's Father's Day commercial this year. You directed a commercial for Nike that aired during the NBA All-Star game this year. You directed and produced a documentary on Blake Griffin. You won an award for Best Short Film at the Bahamas International Film Festival. This is all huge stuff. And so, you know, one of the questions I really wanted to ask you about all these projects were, which one did you feel has been the most interesting or maybe even most challenging to bring to life so far?
Without a doubt, it's this short film, Sides of a Horn, that is executive produced by Sir Richard Branson, that I just recently finished. It was shot on location in South Africa with, it's about the rhino poaching war out there. So we shot with real wild rhino out in these uncontrolled environments in these national parks. We shot in these townships that are on the border of the national parks that, you know, are pretty dangerous places, unless you're there with the right people. It's just been the craziest, most rewarding but challenging experience I've ever had. Basically, do you want me to run you through the film and the experience and how it all came together?
Yeah, I want to actually, if you don't mind, taking it back to, you know, when you originally kind of came up with the idea, how did that sort of pop into your head?
So I was actually in South Africa, just being a tourist on safari, and I met a anti-poaching ranger, who are these incredible people who put their lives on the line every day, at risk of these dangerous animals, but also poachers who are poaching rhino horn and elephant ivory. And I talked to him for like 2 or 3 hours about what was happening. And I just learned that there's so many layers and this issue is so complex. A single rhino horn goes for up to $300,000 on the black market in China, Vietnam, and parts of Asia. And so because the demand is so high and there's so much poverty in South Africa, people go to extreme lengths to get their hands on this asset that is so valuable. But for no reason, it's basically in China and Vietnam, it's believed to have medicinal, they believe that it cures cancer and, they hang it on the wall and it's supposed to be a status symbol. And, but none of that is true, but on the ground in South Africa, it's fueling this war where these anti-poaching rangers and these rangers are, or these anti-poaching rangers and these poachers are literally going to war with each other, killing each other. And the rhino that's stuck in between them, is about 10 years away from extinction. And so it's a really urgent, vital issue. And there's been a lot of documentaries, but nobody's done a narrative film. When I say narrative, a scripted dramatic film, which generally makes it more relatable and accessible to a wider audience than a documentary. And so that's kind of where this whole idea started for me. It was out there in South Africa.
And, you know, I've watched a bunch of the trailers and little teaser clips that I've seen out there on social media for the film. And it does, as you said, look like such an interesting blend of, you know, mostly narrative, but, you know, it almost has a little bit of a documentary-ish feel to it, but it's, you know, it feels much more like a feature film that you'd see in theaters. So why did you land on this format in particular? Was it just sort of the broader appeal to a larger audience?
First of all, I love that you say that because that's absolutely, kind of my voice and style as a filmmaker. So that's a huge compliment that you noticed that just from like a trailer. I love my favorite films blend. They kind of toe the line between narrative and documentary. Everything I do, which I think is really important as a filmmaker, is to kind of brand yourself and find your voice and your distinct style. But everything I do, commercial work, music videos, films, I'd like to stay on the narrative side of very real, raw, gritty, location-based, honest, based on actual events, true stories, real people, stories and films. So it's kind of, and for this film in particular, I think the only way to do it is to do it authentically. I went out there, before we shot and I interviewed, real anti-poaching rangers and real people on all sides of the crisis and kind of approached it as if it were a documentary. I actually shot the interviews and brought them home with me and they're unreleased. That was all part of my research and process. And then I would take those real stories I'd heard and those real pieces of dialogue that, that people were telling me and build them into my script. And then that would inform the actors and everyone on the crew to make this film as authentic as possible, whilst making it feel like a dramatic cinematic film that people would flock to go see.
Can you give us a 1 or 2 minute just kind of synopsis of the storyline?
Yeah, of course. So it's basically a character study about how two guys, and in the story it's two brother-in-laws, who are from the same level of poverty, the same place, even the same family, can go opposite ways in this war, and the effect that that's having on the rhino that's 10 years away from extinction. So the brother-in-law on one side is a dedicated anti-poaching ranger who's given his life to try to save the rhino from extinction. And the other brother-in-law is, his wife is sick, he can't feed his kid. And so out of desperation, he's slipping into this world of poaching. And we follow their stories, and I tried to keep as unbiased as possible. So we spend 50% of the time with the one character and 50% with the other character. And we follow them on their journeys. We're not painting either of them as the protagonist or the antagonist. We're just letting the audience go on their journeys. And they both arrive at this park where one is bent on taking this rhino's life and one is bent on saving the rhino's life. And I won't spoil it, but it's so we're really like trying to be unbiased, show this story, show these two sides for what they are, and let the audience make their decision about what's wrong and what's right. And at the end of the day, it's super, super complex. And so my point in approaching it like that is to say that you can't just point fingers and say one is right and one is wrong. It's so much more complex than that, and it takes a bigger discussion.
Wow. This is fascinating, man. I'm so excited to see this once it comes out. Do you guys have kind of a tentative date in mind that people listening to this episode will be able to see the film?
Yeah, so we're doing a couple of private screenings September 22nd, which is World Rhino Day. And we'll be announcing some stuff around then. And then it'll play at some film festivals the first few months of 2019. And then we're targeting a worldwide release with a lot of big partners like Virgin and Sir Richard Branson and the African Wildlife Foundation on World Wildlife Day, which is March 3rd, 2019, is when it will be online for free. And we're going to try to spread it as far as possible and create this online global discussion around the issue.
Awesome. We are marking our calendars. And, you know, Toby, you mentioned some of the partners, and I want to try and dig into a little bit of the like business side, you could say, to filmmaking. Sir Richard Branson is a partner, right? That's a huge name. Virgin kind of lending their credibility and promotion to a film like this is, I'm sure, going to be hugely impactful. So, you know, for the people listening out there today, how do you get on the radar of whether it's, you know, key individuals or, you know, large global brands? How do you sort of get on their radar and get in touch in order to make partnerships like this happen?
So the way that I've done it, and Sir Richard Branson, this film is one story, but I've done it with a few other things throughout my career. Like my first commercial was a spec, and I got BMW to release it, even though I did it on spec, and it was all through a lot of cold calls and emails and making a splash online. It's so easy these days to make something through a lot of work and finding the right bloggers and social media influencers and people to post about it at the right time around the right with the right strategy. But it's possible to make a huge splash online and get people talking about something, and then people see it. And so that's what I did with this film, Sides of a Horn, and how it ended up with Sergio Brezen on board. We released a crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter, September 22nd, World Rhino Day, 2017. And it didn't go viral around the world in every demographic, but within the world of wildlife activism, where there's a lot of very influential people that are super involved, like Sir Richard Branson, it went viral within that community. And all the organizations saw it and they reached out to me. A lot of brands saw it and reached out to me. And one person or one organization whose radar it landed on was Virgin. And through a long series of conversations and whatnot, we got Sir Richard Branson to agree to put his name on the film once it was complete and he had seen it and approved it and could see that he could actually get behind the message. We sent it to him the day that it was complete, and 2 days later we got an email back saying, "I love this. We'll do whatever we can for it. We're on board." And so, yeah, that's, which was insane. I leaped with joy.
That's awesome. But I mean, it sounds like you really did everything very thoughtfully, right? So, you know, you got to know your audience, right? So first of all, this is something that a person like Richard Branson is already showing that they're deeply invested in, right? Like he has, I want to say he has a game reserve of his own.
He does. Yeah. In South Africa.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, knowing your audience and when you launched the Kickstarter campaign, did you guys kind of produce a trailer or any sort of like preview of what the film is going to be?
Yeah. We put a lot of time and effort into it because we knew that, you know, that was the thing that was going to be shared on social media. And that was going to be our real calling card to raise the funds and find the right partners. And so I went out to South Africa. I spent like a week out there. We went location scouting. We did our casting sessions. We did all of this preliminary work that we would have had to do for the film anyway. But we were able to shoot while we were out there and get all this content that we would be able to cut together this really powerful pitch that was our Kickstarter video and became all of our social media assets and was what publication shared. And so it was like 3.5 minutes long, and it was basically us pitching the film, but it was, I think it got a lot of traction because we were out there, we were doing it. We weren't just talking about it in front of a computer. We were on the ground with these rhino and in these townships. And I think people could tell that we weren't just talking about it. We were, you know, this was going to happen because we were already doing it.
I love this. This is like a crash course in the business side of filmmaking here. So Toby, we're getting a little short on time. So I want to be respectful of that, but I do want to touch on kind of the whole other aspect of what you do. And I know we were briefly talking about this before we hit record, and you had said something to the effect that, you know, so many people get into the film and television industry to do exactly that, film and television, to kind of bring their ideas to life in that format. But a very common way to kind of fund your career in film and television is by doing commercial work, which you know, you've done. You mentioned stuff with BMW, Nike, Blake Griffith. So I want to kind of touch on that aspect of it. How do you sort of, or how did you rather, break into doing your first commercial work?
Definitely. Yeah. So, the only way to, it's a catch 22 when you're starting out, in that the only way to get commercial work is to be signed by a commercial production company and be a director on their roster. But the only way to become a director on a production company's roster to get signed is to already be doing commercial work. So it's a complete catch-22, and it's the only way that I know around it is to make a spec commercial. But I see so many people making spec commercials and it doesn't do anything for their career because the strategy isn't in place. So with what I did, I spent more time before even developing what the commercial was going to be or even thinking about pre-production. I spent more time working on a strategy for what I was going to do with it once it was done than anything else. And so I started out by researching in my network who I knew at different companies with a brand name, a recognizable brand name. And I ended up with three. It was like Crocs, the shoes. It was Pandora Jewelry, and it was BMW. And so I was definitely most excited about BMW. And
oh, I'm surprised not Crocs.
And so I really went after figuring out how to get them to support the spec, or at least consider looking at it and maybe support it if it's that good. Or and so I was able, through months of trying to reach them and following up, and I was able to get them to read this pitch deck that I put together for this commercial, and basically say that they would at least watch it, and if it was good, they would consider putting it, promoting it through their social media channels as if it were a BMW produced commercial. And then I, with that information, I was able to I needed to shoot at a racetrack. So I was able to bring on a racetrack who were excited about the idea of potentially BMW getting behind something that was shot on their racetrack. And so it made sense for both of us, and they were able to provide all the cars, the professional drivers, the locations. They even had housing that we slept in. So I was able to make this commercial that looks like it was made for a lot of money on, you know, like a couple thousand dollars that I personally invested in it. And then we made it. We sent it to BMW. They were like, "Oh wow, this is actually good. We're down to use this and put it on our official channels." And then I put a ton of work into reaching out to publications and journalists and influencers and making sure that this didn't fall on deaf ears and it was going to be seen by a lot of people and the right people, which was really in the advertising industry, in the commercial space. And so it worked. It got a lot of buzz. It was seen by a lot of people who started reaching out to me and offering me work and offering to bring me onto the commercial production company roster as a director. And now I was a commercial director who was up for real work. But it took a lot of strategy and like entrepreneurial tenacity. It wasn't just, I'm going to make a really cool spec commercial and throw it up and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, what you just described right there, I'm going to make a quick spec commercial, throw it up, see what happens. I feel like that's what the majority of people probably do. But yeah, I mean, God, I just want to highlight to everyone listening, like, this is probably months of work. Is that safe to say? Like, this is a lot of work.
This was like half a year of work. Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, I guess, I mean, hey, the payoff has been great.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, I love it. All right. Well, Toby, this is going to be the last question that I wanted to ask you today. So for those people out there who want to break into the filmmaking industry, what's your number one piece of advice for them? What should they focus on above all else?
honestly, it's a lot of what we just talked about, which is thinking about strategy for each project and for your career as a whole. I think that in general, as a creative person in a creative industry, we want to only think about creative stuff, and that's what excites us. And we just want to write the next thing and direct the next thing or whatever it is that you're doing in the industry. But you only really get those opportunities if you spend just as much time thinking about strategy and business and being entrepreneurial. And then once you get over that hurdle and you've got yourself in a position where you don't need to worry about the strategy so much, then it starts to become more creative and you can spend more time on the creative, less time on the strategy. And I'm still like 50-50 right now. But I can see where the future's going. And as I start to get the right team around me with my commercial reps and my manager and agents, and then you're in a position to where that stuff starts to streamline itself and you can truly be a creative. But if you want to get to that position and turn this into a career, like, it's a lot of strategy and business and thinking about it as an entrepreneur.
I love it. This has been awesome. Can you tell everyone listening today where they can go to learn more about you, all your different projects, Sides of a Horn, and find everything online?
So my personal website is my name, www.tobywosko.com. It's TobyWosko.com. And then you can check out some stuff for Sides of a Horn at rhinomovie.com. And follow me on social media at TobyWosko or at TobyWosko.
Perfect. All right. We'll include links to all of Toby's projects in the show notes as well. So Toby, thank you for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks, Ryan.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.